Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen, a cooking store located at 100 Frost Street in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Join me every Wednesday as I talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. Please take a moment to like the show on iTunes and reach out to me if you have any questions. You can find me on email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com, and on social media, @thefoodballer. Today's episode number 61 of Feast Your Ears. I was lucky enough to sit down January 21st, 2017 at the Good Food Mercantile at the Fort Mason Center in San Francisco, California, and interview Elias and Michelle Cairo. They're the brother and sister behind Portland, Oregon's formidable meat company and restaurant group, Olympia Provisions. They're the largest buyer of pigs in the state of Oregon and are working with farmers to change how the animals are raised. Enjoy the interview. Welcome to another live episode of Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen, and I'm really pleased to have my good friends Michelle and Eli Cairo in the studio, such as it is here, the room that we're using here in Fort Mason to step in or stand in for the Heritage Radio studio here at the Good Food Mercantile. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
I want to point out that, you know, obviously people who have been listening understand that this is all related to the Good Food Awards. I believe you guys, Olympia Provisions, is the winningest company at the Good Food Awards ever.
I think so. This is our 11th, and I like the word winningest a lot. That's,
I think that's amazing. You know, this is the premier awards for good food and, you know, real food, and you guys have won more awards than anybody, so that's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. We love it every year. It's like, what do we do without them? You know, we needed somebody to champion all these amazing producers and actually do it, not only from being delicious, but making sure it's responsible and make sure you're having a good impact.
This morning in conversation, actually, among a bunch of retailers, where it was mentioned that in your book, which is beautiful and people should check out, the Olympia Provisions Cookbook, you know, you talk about the fact that actually winning the first award was sort of the thing that actually made the business work.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, I came down here and I was my only employee at the time in the meat department. You know, I was making all the sausage, doing all the USDA and everything. We won this award. Michelle entered everything. And I was doing the farmer's market with Tyler, my business partner, and we're slicing up salami, and Sam Morgan from BuyRight comes up, and he, you know, I'm a huge, everybody knows of BuyRight, and he introduced himself, and it took me a second to sink in, and he's like, this is really delicious, is there any way I can get an application to get your product? And I'm like, yeah, sure, you bet, bud, like, I'll just figure this out and ship it out to you. Totally lied, had nothing going on, you know, tried to make it as big as we could, got home and told Michelle, I was like, BuyRight wants to carry our product, like, figure this out for me.
Let me take it back to the team. Let me take it, okay, and I'm in the hotel room by myself, and I'm the team, right?
Yeah, let me get that, ship that over to HR and then packaging, and then, yeah, we'll get that down to, yeah, it was great, though.
So let's take a little step back. So obviously we know each other, and so we're very comfortable sort of chatting and riffing. Listeners may not be as familiar. I hope that everyone listening has tasted the wonderful products from Olympia Provisions, but can you guys give a sort of brief introduction of the company, how it got started?
To go way, way back. First off, Michelle's my sister. The Cairo sometimes throws people into a loop.
They
think they were married. I did an apprenticeship.
So it goes way, way back, is what you're saying.
Back to 1975. Yeah. I did a Swiss apprenticeship up in the mountains where I learned how to cure meat from an amazing man. And long story short, I come back to Portland, Oregon after 5 years of doing it. Michelle and I are walking around a beautiful farmer's market. We're getting a picnic together and wine to go get drunk and enjoy it and have a great time. And I'm like, we need a stick of salami. And Michelle's like, I don't know if anybody produces salami here. And I was like, oh, I do. Michelle, let me tell you about it. And, you know, this was 2003 probably. And yeah. She was kind of like, you're crazy. You know, nobody's going to eat this high fat meat and salami. She's like, and you are flat broke, so right. Go get a job. And I just never let up. I was like, Michelle, this is what I want to do. And then in 2009, I borrowed money from my sister. And she is a finance, you know, she was in the finance world. What were you doing? Opus? You were the...
At that point, I was the director of finance for the power company.
Yeah. Just that. And I was making sausage. And then, you know, I opened up in a small 900 square foot room and was Oregon's first USDA approved curing facility that we got the true, you know, like talked to the USDA, wanted to cure meat my way. I didn't want to cook. I wanted to slow ferment and use all the degree hours I possibly could and do it completely natural. And with Michelle working on the HACCP with me and doing the food science, we slowly but surely made it. And then that year we won 3 good food awards. Michelle was still working her Kush office job.
Back in the day.
Yeah, and then we started shipping more product out. People like you started purchasing us from New York. I think you were 2010 is when you started getting our product. Yeah. So like within the first year, which is amazing. And, you know, Oprah wrote something about our chorizo, and it started, this web store wasn't up and running, and Michelle was, you know, I was on the phone all day. She'd be commuting to work, and I was on the phone, and I was like, she was literally like, you're missing so much opportunity. And I'm like, I think we are missing so much opportunity. And she, you know, she had that, like, when she first said it, I was like, are you kidding? You're going to quit your actual job that makes money and come work with your little brother in this little tiny meat company? And thank God she did, because it has obviously changed the whole thing. And we are a real professional company and we have 180 employees right
wow.
now.
Wow. Oh, right, because with the restaurants and everything,
the restaurants, farmers markets, demo people.
Yeah. And, you know, bustling web store and all the stuff except the sausage, Michelle makes sure it comes together, the web store, making sure we get to hire great people. And, yeah, so it wouldn't be here without her.
Or you.
Oh, thanks, Sean.
You better win a good food award next year.
You
so.
Bet. I'll keep trying.
Yeah, you guys are on a good streak. Do you worry? Do you worry that you're going to apply and not win?
Every year I'm like, yeah, what's going to happen? Like,
And just so those listening understand, with the good food award and the sort of the universe of the Good Food Mercantile is very congenial, but the awards are incredibly above board, and it is a completely blind tasting. So just lest anybody worry that we're all friendly and, oh, you're going to win an award. No. It is completely blind, and the things that are the best are the things that win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. I did one of the tastings, I think, like 5 years ago. And it's just amazing how much product and what goes on to the organization.
Man, I think
and
it was
how blind.
2,000 entries this year?
2,000 entries. I mean, it's, and they're just amazing in all this category, the meat category. There's so many delicious products, and it's great. So every time I get really excited to be nominated and equally nervous. This time when I think we had 3 finalists, all 3 were finalists, and only one won, the Landrokshinken. But yeah. Michelle, like when I won, I was like, Michelle simply said, you only won one. And I was like, are you kidding me?
I say that Michelle, part in jest.
Like, are you kidding? Like, that's... I was like, yes, it instantly just got, you know.
And so that's a new product for you. So I mean, you guys, I think, are best known for your original salami. I mean, your small format fermented salamis. But you do a whole host of other things now.
Yeah. What is our SKU list? How many products do I have?
76.
76 different products.
And that spans not just meat. You guys have pickles involved in that as well.
Pickles, chocolates. You know, it's with our restaurants, as we've noticed, is, you know, we make all this amazing products, and then we have really talented, hardworking people that make it as well. And then they, you know, they have ideas and want to stay with the company. And
sure.
If we have a small space as we keep growing, we give it to them and we utilize it, and then we get a following. And yeah, so the pickle room's quite amazing right now. He's making a lot of pickles, and people are really receptive to it. So that's growing nicely, and he's managing it all. And yeah, it's
so tell great. Me about, tell me about the new, the pro, I don't even know how to pronounce
the
it.
The Landrokshinken.
Landrokshinken. Yeah. So tell me about it. What is it?
It's the longest name product I have.
17 letters.
All right.
17 letters, and this is, you know, our marketing.
More
our,
expensive
our
packaging.
Our marketing department really loves the names. It's, every time I come up with these names, they're just like, just no. Like, just name it smoked dried ham, damn it. But it's a Swiss mountain ham. I learned to make it, or I've learned how to make it since my apprenticeship, and I've always really loved it. So we take the entire loin of the pig, keep all the skin on it, and the entire fat back, so the lardo, and then the loin, and then we salt it like you would a prosciutto, so it cures for, you know, 20 days in salt. Then I pull it out and I burn sugar, and I dip the entire loin in burnt sugar, and then I hang it, and I toss it lightly in juniper and rosemary, and then I hang it and then smoke it for 18 hours over apple wood and a little bit of hickory. And it's just beautiful. Like the
color. For people who are listening, it is as good as it sounds.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's
so good.
I love it. Yeah, and it's, you know, there's some of these products that I like. I just have so much faith in. You know, like I really want them to win and do well, but it's hard to get people to try them. And so, yeah. It was. I think it was huge that I won it.
I mean, I think it represents for me something that I've always thought was really special about you guys and what you do, which is that you're willing to kind of take risks, right, and make things that nobody else. I mean, yeah. Salami, honestly, looking at what's out there now, is a safer choice, right? There are a lot of people making salamis.
Absolutely.
But I very clearly remember the first time I ever came to see you guys in Portland, hanging up in your restaurant above the bar was an entire pig that had been taken apart and looked like a bat. Hanging up there, curing like prosciutto, but it wasn't just the legs.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember sitting there, eating lunch and looking and being like, "Oh, that what? Wait a minute. Yes, that is what I think it is. It is a half a pig that is curing, hanging up in the rafters of the restaurant."
Yeah. We have way too much meat time on our hands. And this one, this one was taken from, there's an amazing man, and I can't think of his name, in Spain, but he cures half hogs for restaurants, exactly like that. And he hangs it off of very unique, like he'll hang it off of a tooth and an eyeball, and he'll weight the tail, and it turns into these really beautiful Dali-esque, like, sculptures. And
it hangs, just like a slow liquid kind of.
And Tyler couldn't get enough of this guy, and I started producing like one a year for us, and now it's just fun. But I love
one day we'll
it.
Sell it as a product.
Yeah, a whole pig. You buy it and hang it in the Brooklyn kitchen.
It's pretty
for
cool.
Sure.
Try it.
Well, I think you know what it makes me think of is that it's not something to just put on a menu. It's not something to just have in such. It's something to create an event around.
Absolutely.
It's something to say this thing is coming. There's only one.
Yep.
We're going to have this event. It's going to go all day. There's going to be lots of drinking, whatever, and we're going to cut this thing apart and
Try to eat the whole thing.
Try to eat the whole thing.
Do it in the summer. We have lots of melons, something. Or tomatoes. Yeah, or lettuce. But yeah, we should definitely. Yeah, it takes a year and a half to make, so let's get it on the books.
All right, let's do it. Let's totally. Yeah, that'd be great. So you guys are from a Greek family.
Yes.
Right?
Uh-huh.
What is that, like, you know, I mean, I have, like, a sense of what that means, but I grew up a Jewish kid in New York, so, like, the, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the media would have us believe that, like, Greek families are, like, loud and eat a lot and drink a lot of wine.
Yes,
is that sort of what it's about?
Yes, still to this day.
Great. I mean, you've seen my Greek, or what am I, fat Greek wedding. That's essentially spot on for us. Our family is so exactly that, you know.
We all work together. My mom's our demo person. Yeah. My niece is our sales person. Like, it is a very Greek family.
Family oriented.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you guys, you grew up in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
But you weren't from Utah, right, originally?
Me and Michelle and I were both born.
You were born in Utah.
And
did your parents, did your dad emigrate directly from Greece to Utah?
To Chicago.
Okay.
And then he was.
That makes more sense. So I was trying to figure out, like, did the Mormons suck him in or something?
There are a lot of Greeks in Utah because of the copper mines. So during the Greek Depression, they all came and worked in the copper mines.
I did not know
that. And a lot of them stayed. And so it's a huge population of Greeks, actually.
I find that so bizarre to think about compared to the Mormons, who are teetotalers.
Yeah.
And I mean, just like, I'm just like trying to like figure out how those two things kind of collide.
Yeah, it was a definite unique upbringing for sure. I mean, we kind of talk about it in our books, but, you know, we'd be going to work on Sunday or, you know, going, like, when people are getting ready in our neighborhood. It was kind of suburbia, but it was, like, horse property. We each had about an acre, and our dad turned it into, like, a full operating suburban farm. Goats, pigeons, ducks, chickens, But we had like 110 pigeons.
So embarrassing.
And it was just amazing. For me, I loved it, you know? And
I mean, you say embarrassing, right? I mean, as a teenager, but looking back on it. Looking back on it now, right? I mean,
it's amazing like an incredible, now, but like, sure. You know, we are like surrounded by all these blonde hair, blue eyed, lovely children, and
perfect
we have like
lawns,
goats hanging off yeah. of our swing set that our dad would be slaughtering for a party or mm-hmm. something.
And we would, after church on Sunday, we, you know, the whole Greek church, my godfather and everybody would come back and we would be spit roasting. You know, until the sun comes up in the morning and roasting and drinking and dancing in our front yard and all this, you know, the Mormons weren't having it. They were
just like naked statues in the front yard.
We
had pillars. Like,
nice. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you guys were the family then that the Mormon kids were like, God, I hate my parents. They're so boring. I want to go hang out at the Cairo house.
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
we had all the caffeine.
Yeah. Our mom was such a loving mother, cooked for the whole neighborhood. You know, like, I don't think there was a day in our life we woke up without baklava on the table or like every Greek pastry. It was just consistently there all day, every day. Candies and And then we'd go to their house and be like, oh my God, you guys have Fruity Pebbles?
Oh my God, we were so excited
about
Fruity
Pebbles. Can we please have a Fruity Pebble?
Wonder Bread?
Oh my God.
White bread? What do you mean?
Yeah.
Is this American sliced cheese? Like, can we just have a cheese sandwich right now? No feta? Is it garlic? Yeah. Yeah, I've told you this story once before, but I'll tell it. It's me and Michelle one time, we were, our principal called my dad and my mother into school, and my father shows up, and the principal looks at my father, and he's like, your children are being too disruptive in class. The children around them are all complaining because you reek too much like garlic. And not only did we consume an ungodly amount of garlic, but my father and my mother would pin garlic into our clothing for the evil eye. So we were toting around garlic, and we stunk like garlic. And then when my father, the principal told my father just had a really thick accent his whole life, you know. And he stood up and like pushed the table back, and he was like, "Your kids smell like detergent and Jello." And he grabbed Michelle and I, and we go running out. And he was not having it. It's kind of awesome, but that sums it up in a, you know, we had Billy Valamis, who's a Greek, Michelle Cairo and Eli Cairo, and the entire school, elementary school.
Like 3,000 children.
Was all LDS. And I love them. I mean, they're great, great people, but we were definitely stuck out, reeking like garlic and
smelling.
The only people that drink coffee.
you mentioned in the pre-show questionnaire, I asked you about what the first thing you learned to cook was, and you said scrambled eggs with feta and Greek coffee. What's Greek coffee?
Turkish coffee.
Turkish
coffee. Yeah, where you boil it three times and you add the sugar, but like that.
Does it have cardamom in it like Turkish coffee does, or it's just...
No, most people don't. They
got
just...
it.
Finely ground.
Yeah. But the Greeks say that they invented Turkish coffee.
Of course, that makes
sense. So we don't.
Of course.
It's not Turkish coffee.
It's Greek coffee.
It's Greek coffee.
Yeah.
I mean, they invented government, right?
Isn't that?
Yeah.
I mean,
like, you know.
I'd say that and everything else.
Today's program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, period. Why? Lush grasslands, glacial water supply, fourth generation cheesemakers, combining old world tradition with the new ideas and highest standards. The very best milk. What do you think of when you think of Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds, delicious fresh cheese curds, or deep fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Upland's Cheese Company, the operation behind the Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese that's literally America's most awarded cheese. I think of the deliciously stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think about Raleigh's Dumbarton Blue, a perfect blend of English-style cheddar and notes of blue. I think of Emmy Roth's Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Champion at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Wisconsin is like the world champion of cheese, and once you start reading the list of cheeses made in Wisconsin on their website, you can see why. The Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board is a nonprofit organization funded entirely by Wisconsin's dairy farm families. Read more at eatwisconsincheese.com. And as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, eat Wisconsin cheese. It's a no-brainer.
So tell me a little bit about the restaurants. So you, in 2009, started making sausage alone in a room.
Yep.
And fast forward now almost 8 years, mm-hmm. from one employee, you have almost 200 employees.
Yep.
Tell me about, and then how did you get into the restaurant business?
So, yeah, you know, When I came back, I started cooking at a really nice restaurant called Castagna. I became the executive chef. And there I friended the friend of the house manager was Nate Tilden, my business partner. And he opened up in the Ace Hotel, the Clyde Commons.
Yep.
And at this time, everybody knew I wanted to open up a charcuterie shop. I could, you know, I was working as a chef throughout the day, and at night I would be learning HACCP and CFRs and all that boring junk for the USDA. And then Nate, at his wedding randomly, he's like, you know, Eli, I'm opening up a charcuterie restaurant, and it's going to be charcuterie-focused, but we're just going to make it in-house. And I was like, I'm this close to opening up my USDA plant. Let's get a beer when you get back from your honeymoon. He sat down, and he's like, it's going to be me. And I was like, wow, I'm trying to get out of restaurants with everything in my entire power, but this sure seems like it might be a fun opportunity. And I asked Michelle, she thought it was a good idea, and we kind of looked at it. And
so, yeah, they actually opened up
the same day. Yeah.
And that was the space where I first visited you guys, right?
Yeah. Got it. So the little meat shop in the back, full restaurant in front. Yep. I don't recommend that to anybody when opening a USDA meat plant. Do not attach it to a restaurant.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I bet the inspector does not love that.
Yeah, it was just a bad layout. You know, restaurants and meat plants should be separate. Yeah. But, you know, we were... wild,
so we did it
fearless,
twice,
and then we thought it was such a bad idea. We should do it again.
So then we opened another restaurant 2 years later, but with a meat shop behind it again.
Mm-hmm. That one was 4,000 square feet, and I had 3 employees in the meat plant at that time. And then that lasted 2 years and got us 3 more good food awards or 4 more good food awards. And then 2 years ago now, we opened our first real grown-up meat plant, and it's like 40,000 square feet of meat making heaven, and we can finally build a pallet and hold an inventory. And
now I haven't been there in a while. Are you guys busting at the seams yet in that space?
We're expanding right now. Yeah.
Not busting at the seams yet, but we are starting to expand drying rooms.
We've maxed out the
lines,
dry room this
smoking
year.
Smoking lines. Mm.
And yeah, it's awesome.
All right, so that you have the main meat plant, which is where your corporate offices are also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you have how many restaurants now?
2 restaurants and 3
5
fast
total.
Casual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, 5 total. Soon.
Yeah.
We're opening the next one in a couple weeks.
Uh-huh. Those
now, what about the motorcycle hot dog cart?
Yeah, that happens too, yeah. So we do 13 farmers markets a week, and then we operate the mobile hot dog cart that's around town all the time and doing catering gigs. And then we also have a BMW motorcycle delivery vehicle that is Michelle's biggest folly.
Yeah, I let them purchase that on a whim, and
that wasn't there. It was amazing. I wasn't gone, and I came home, and Michelle finally like,
"Oh, so
you
can't even be mad at Eli?"
No, it's not me. I get to be mad. It's amazing. So yeah, it's like she's so good with money, and I come home and I'm like, we bought a motorcycle, and I don't even have a.
My partner Nate convinced me.
A fork.
It wasn't even Tyler.
No, and what's it called? It's called the. What's it called? We have the Hambulance, which is our delivery truck.
Right, the Hambulance, that's
the Das Wiener Mobil.
Das Wiener Mobil, thank you.
Mobil, okay.
And then we have the Das Wiener Mobil, but and then the cart. Which is
do you
there.
Make Nate run it?
when that gets out, yes.
Yeah.
And he does it. He'll like go do errands and pick up and deliver things, but it's, yeah.
So I have to ask, do you have a favorite product? I know it's like asking what your favorite child is.
Yeah,
it's not really fair.
I always go back to my Saucy Sunday Arl. You know, it's the fermented sea salt salami that's just salt and fermented pork, and it's the most difficult one to produce. And it was one that I
because you can't really hide behind any flavors,
peppers,
right?
And you got to be really good at what you're doing. And if your molds are bad, you're going to taste it. If there's any, you know, your pork's cheap or anything like that, you're going to taste it. And it changes throughout the year. So I really, really, really love that one. It's frustrating. I throw more of that product away than any product. Mm-hmm. But when it's perfect, it's really, really perfect. So I always do that. But right now it's Landrauchschinken also.
I mean, just won an award. That, you know, you got to be happy when your kids get A's, right? That's
promoter.
How it works.
Yeah, for sure.
Something I wanted to touch on is that as you guys have grown, you have become a very large market for the farms that you work with for the pork. And I think that's really interesting as far as looking at the award ceremony last night and looking at how food and how good food can have an effect on sort of a larger community than just this one, which, you know, I think from the outside can sometimes seem very insular, and it is very friendly and collegial, but I think that's super valuable. So I'm wondering if you could touch a little bit on sort of how you procure your pigs, but then how you've affected kind of the farms you work with.
Yeah, it's a great question. So actually through Sarah Wiener, she introduced me to a gentleman named Will Cole that was doing his master's in Yale in forestry. And we started talking, and about, I guess this was last year, we convinced him to come and do a full audit on my process and to ever look at everything that we're doing and actually giving us a full review on the impact that we're having on Oregon. You know, we're very upfront. We've always wanted to make sure that if this thing is growing, we're doing it. We're going to make Oregon a better place and make the land a better place. And we're going to do everything in that. That's easy to say, but it's hard to, like, really focus and make sure that you're doing it. And we wanted that third person to come in and look at all the slaughterhouses, look at our farmers, tell us what we can do to make it a better place. And then he's done that. And so right now we're in the midst of trying to actually maybe change the way that everyone in Oregon is getting their pigs. We'd like it to be a multi-species ranch, not only have singular species, ideally. Oregon in the West, as you know, is cattle country, and yep. It is really, really difficult. We are learning to have cattle ranchers look at it and be like, hey, look how great these pigs have done for this ranch as tilling the soil and taking out invasive species. And, you know, you're able to ranch on every square inch or mile of your ranch now. Try this. And they're like, well, we're not pig farmers. And you're like, no, I don't care what you are. Like, just please just see this. And so right now we have three wonderful ranchers that are on the hook, have seen the process, have really done it, and are working for. And then this will be our model three that we will hopefully be able to spread throughout Oregon. You know, last year we went through 20,000 hogs in a year. That's a lot
wow.
of pigs.
It know? Is.
It's a, yeah. And if we, it, you can easily see why people go the conventional way of feedlots and bad pulls, and it's hard to make sure you're doing everything you can to keep the pig source going the right way. But yeah, so that's we feel really, really good about it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be our most exciting year, because now we're thinking, you know, we're the market now for pork in Oregon, mm-hmm. which is
are
so
are you the
weird.
Largest single purchaser of pork in the
I
state?
I really think we're pretty
think
close.
We are.
Yeah. And so now we're like, gosh, we actually have the opportunity to make such a difference for Oregon, because Oregon in the last 5 years has really decreased their pork. And so, you know, we have to go into Washington, Idaho, Montana, and stuff to get pork. And we're like, this is crazy. We have all this beautiful land, and it's a lot of cattle land. And so we're just like, how do we, you know, make it so that the farmers feel comfortable, so doing some, like, long-term contracts. And, you know, that, but we still don't end up with a salami that costs $30, because I think right. that's such a, you know,
very
like,
important piece, yeah.
like, it's so important to me to be able to look at the whole model of how we get our pork and eliminate the things that don't really matter, but make sure that the farmer has a good living. Mm-hmm. You know, we sell our product, we can support our families and do all this, and like, and that the consumer at the end still can afford the product. And so right. it's something we've just really been working on. A ton of business models and that kind of stuff to see yeah. how we can do it. And so we're like literally taking these farmers, these three farmers, and we're like, okay, drop every cost you have in here and like, let's figure this out and let us look at like, maybe we can help you with transportation. Maybe we can negotiate some slaughter. Maybe we can move a product, other products that you can't move, like chicharrones, or like figure out different things. Cause I mean, Eli's amazing at charcuterie and he can turn any part of that animal into something delicious so
right.
far.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
proved
I mean,
that. And yeah. so like, why not? We have the market. And so yeah. and it's just,
yeah, we find it so shocking when we talk to ranchers and most people that are in agriculture that they're completely comfortable losing money and not making a quality living.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the ranchers, if they break even and don't need like federal funding to go through, they're fine. And we look at it like, we can help you. Like, you guys, if we focus on moving this pig and making it the highest quality product, and you focus on your land and ranching, let's make sure you guys have a living
and
as
a
it
salary.
Should be. Because, yeah, they're locked into a cow and calf operation, and they're getting the return on their investment every year and a half. And we can simply show them with one sow, you'll get
6 months.
Nine piglets, and we'll take every pinch you grow. Now you just start moving your way. And I think we hope that once we get a few of these model ranches up doing it with the multi-species and rotating the pigs after it, and it does the improvements that we've seen to land, that it's going to start coming in a quicker cycle.
I hope so. I mean, it's impressive that you guys have grown to the point to be able to have that effect.
Yeah.
And that's also the tactic you're taking, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine if Smithfield Ham felt the same way,
right?
Oh.
Right? Imagine if Oscar Mayer felt the same
For
way,
sure.
what that would look like to the entire meat industry.
Well, and I want us to be the people that prove that it's a sustainable way and we can bring it to the customer at an affordable price, because that is the only way we're really going to make a change. Because if everybody can afford this, then you have all these buyers and everyone will go towards this model. But we are very optimistic and idealistic, but I think it's possible.
And we see it. I really think that once the model happens and people see that it is possible as a family, and like, you know, we don't have to be a big corporation to make this big change, that it's going to happen across America. Once you make an example and you really start pushing it.
I mean, that's a good point too. I find it encouraging in the world that you guys have continued to grow, but also look at how many more charcuterie makers are featured here.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And how many more there are in the country now. And it's like the market isn't slowing, right? It's sort of like somehow the Good Food Awards and the Mercantile and this whole specialty food world has like opened a door, just a crack in the consumer interest in products that people in lots of places didn't even know was out there.
Yeah.
Because they had no accessibility to it at all.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's not like suddenly there's more sausage makers and you guys are seeing a hit on your business. Your business continues to grow.
No.
More people are getting into it. Their business is growing. It's better for the farmers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the economy that this all represents is continuing to grow, which is really positive.
And so important. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I love it. I love seeing a kid look at their mom and be like, I want a Lucanica. And realize like 5 years ago, nobody even knew what a Lucanica is. And now
I thought there was Greek salami.
Or, you know.
They're just used to Italian salami. Yeah. And so, it's like cheese to me, like 20 years. You know what
Sure.
No, brie was like, oh, wow, you've got special
or
brie.
Or bread. Look at bread 35 years ago in this country.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, so charcuterie is coming up.
And it's great. Like, the education part is great. You know, bologna's delicious.
Yep.
People are finally seeing it and all
good
and it's getting respected.
Delicious.
You know, yeah, for sure.
Eli, tell me about your dogs.
Awesome. Yeah, my favorite thing ever.
I know you have a couple cats too, but
they
don't show up in your Instagram nearly as much as your dogs.
They don't give me dinner ever. The dogs, So, you know, we have an amazing 9-month bird hunting season in Oregon, which is just amazing. And so, if you have yourself a bird dog, which I have two now, Leather and Utah. Utah's like only 17 weeks old. He's adorable. And we hunt birds nonstop. And I think I have 6 in Olympia provisions from the breeder. So, we have 6 Britneys that we can go hunt birds, and it's the best thing in the whole world. You know, nothing.
Not in Olympia provision. Our friends have these
dogs. They're in the circle of
Olympia
provisions.
Thank you, Michelle, for pointing out, if the USDA is listening, the dogs are not in the factory.
But it's, I love it more than anything. It's the best way to spend a day off in the whole world is running behind your dogs and trampling through beautiful country of Oregon and shoot dinner and then find mushrooms on the way back and the huge roasts. And
you lucky motherfuckers, man.
It's so good.
New York, you can't really do that. I mean, you can, but it's not the same.
Well, you're my big homie, so come out anytime. I will make this happen.
I definitely
anytime.
Will. So, speaking of game, I have not done much hunting. I've not done a lot of consuming of game. Do you have favorites? I mean, are there? Oh. I mean, I know that the part of the draw is the event, right, of being up early in the morning and being out in the woods with your dogs. And there's a lot, a lot of that that's really awesome. But are there particular birds that you prefer to go after for eating?
100%. Yeah. So a true forest grouse, when they eat in the early fall, they eat berries, and so their entire crops are full of like blueberries and blackberries, and their meat is like, it's unbelievably sweet, like a true berry, and their fat really flavors.
Because
like,
they're getting ready for winter, right?
They're just loading up. And then I really like to shoot late season wild turkeys because they eat a lot of juniper and pine, and their like entire body tastes of juniper. So I mean, I love pheasant. They're fine. I mean, I duck and pheasant and quail are all amazing species, but. And I still eat them way too much and love them more than anything. But if I get a good grouse, you're not going to taste it. I'll keep those for myself. And turkey is the wild turkey. Once or twice a year, a good fattened wild turkey is just amazing meat. But yeah, you just got to come down and we'll show you, man.
I will come out.
Let's go shoot some birds.
Anything, we're coming to the end here of our interview, but anything you guys want to mention? You have another restaurant opening soon, right?
Yeah, our OP Worst brand. So it's just... It stemmed from our restaurants on Fridays. We would do this thing called Frankfurter Friday, and we would do like crazy hot dogs and stuff. And so we decided to like launch a brand all the way around like fancy hot dogs. It's expanded a little more into all of our sausages, but yeah, we're pretty stoked about it.
Yeah. You know, every sausage maker wants to have a beer bar, and we finally are finally convinced him to not only to eat my sausages, but we can have tons of delicious beer and eat sausages and have fun. And yeah. I'd also like to say, please go to the Brooklyn Kitchen because it's an amazing place, and I love it so much. And
heard that.
And Harry's amazing.
Well, thank you,
hi,
guys.
Hi, Taylor.
Yep. I hope she's listening. Maybe Moxie's listening. Moxie was my co-host on my show last week.
No
she was off school.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We are grooming Moxie to be the next generation of Heritage Radio hosts.
Awesome. Yeah. You got a good one there.
Yeah.
So everyone who's listening, thank you. You can find out more about these guys and all the wonderful things that they produce at OlympiaProvisions.com. And highly recommend if you want to see pictures of Brittany Spaniels
hunting
and game birds. Follow Elias Cairo at Elias Cairo, and if you want to see pictures of sort of everything in the Olympia Provisions kind of world, follow at Olympia Provisions.
Thanks for having us, guys. That was fun.
Thanks for listening today to Feast Your Ears. The interview you just heard was recorded at the Fort Mason Center in San Francisco, California, at the Good Food Mercantile, January 21st, 2017. Big thank you to Kristen Baylor, my producer here, and David Tatasciore for engineering and making the trek out to California with us. You can find Feast Your Ears as well as lots of other great shows at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and all over the internet. Follow me on Instagram at TheFoodBaller. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.